Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, Text Numbers 39 and 40. They've got two verses up there. So we'll just chant 39. Tad upa dravam agyaya lukasha basu lumpatam bataryuparate tasmin anyanyam cha jighamsatam. Tad upadravam agyaya lokasavasu lumpatam bataryuparate tasmin anyanyam cha jighamsatam. I'll read the second Sanskrit slope as well. Chorapriyam janapadam hina satvam harajakam lokan navarayanam chakta api tat doshidashina tat at that time upadravam the disturbance agyaya understanding lokasha of the people in general vasu riches, lumpatam, by those who were plundering, bhattari, the protector, upadate, being dead, tajmin, king Vena, anyanyam, one another, cha, also, jighamsatam, desiring to kill. Chorapraham, full of thieves, janapadam, the state, hina, bereft of, satvam, regulation, arajakam, without a king, lokan, the thieves and rogues, na, not, avarayan, the subdued, Shaktaha, able to do so. Api, although. Tat-dosha, the fault of that. Darshanaha, considering. Purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The saintly persons and great sages killed King Vena out of emergency, but they did not choose to take part in the government in order to subdue the uprising of thieves and rogues, which took place after the death of King Vena. It is not the duty of brahmanas and saintly persons to kill, although they may sometimes do so in the case of an emergency. They could kill all the thieves and rogues by the prowess of their mantras, but they thought it the duty of Kshatriya kings to do so. Thus, they reluctantly did not take part in the killing business. Here we see that the brahmanas, they you know, they're considering that there is an established order within the universe, as established by the Vedas, by Krishna, and they don't want to disrupt that order. So, you know, it's in this situation, of course, here we have the situation where a king has caused so much trouble, so much harm in the world, that the brahmanas, those who, you know, the intelligent section of society, who look after the interests of, you know, the welfare of people, you know, in an unmotivated way, you know, they've had to, you know, kill the king. So now, in this world, we have there are many anarchists, which means that they consider that because we have bad governments, which no one really seems to disagree with, that therefore let's do away with this whole principle of government. You know, why have government if they're causing so much trouble? So we know that, you know, all sorts of terrible things go on by governments. So we have, you know, just recently, you know, you've got the Russians are being accused of, you know, killing some of their own countrymen in Britain, poisoning them and causing a lot of havoc to the people of England themselves, because that poison is just evidently spread around. So, you know, they're being accused by the entire international community. And so many other atrocities. And also, you know, different governments, China, Russia, have been accused of, you know, hacking into, you know, the you know, the internet of you know, the different governments of the world, and wreaking havoc in their business and their governments. So, you know, there's a lot of mischief. And then, of course, you have so many countries where you know, they literally, the citizens are being killed in the hundreds of thousands. You know, for the purpose of one ruler or another being able to take control. And of course, when they do take control, they somehow, although they're there as public servants, they become billionaire public servants while they're in rule, by you know, kickbacks, and by buying all sorts of you know, military arms, ammunitions, so doing good business for the ammunition companies. So there's just so much problem in the world, so many problems, so much cover-ups and corruption, what have you. So therefore, you know, the reaction is that people become, there's anarchy. You know, crime increases. Crime increases. Here, not just for want of strong government, but also as a rebellion against the feeling, well, you know, you're just a bigger thief than I am. You have the power to be a thief and a rogue and a murderer. We're both the same, but you're getting away with it because you have the power and I don't. Prabhupada tells the story of, you know, one man who was condemned to be punished very severely, of course, for stealing some bread because he was hungry. And Alexander the Great, he came before him, and of course, you know, in those previous days, quite often the king himself literally, you know, inflict the punishment, chop off a hand or chop off a head here and there. So, but you know, when he was asked to plead his case, he said, well, there's no difference between you or I. If I'm to be punished, and so are you, perhaps you more so, because, you know, I've just taken a loaf of bread, or because I'm hungry, and you're plundering whole countries and taking their, you know. So Alexander, as Prabhupada says, he was a great person because he admitted, you're correct, you know. That is what I'm doing. Yes, I'm plundering all over the world. So therefore we have this situation where, you know, crime increases. You know, people feel that there is no order. You know, there is no purpose to government. You know, if people get into government and they plunder and become thieves and rogues, then, you know, there's no real purpose to have government. And there's no reason why I shouldn't do what the leaders are doing. So we have this situation in the world. And, you know, many of the youth, you know, there are sometimes problems of crime in certain sections of the youth growing up, because they have seen too much atrocities coming from those in power, and you know, it's very disturbing to them. So this, but here, you know, the brahmanas, they want to, again, they're not thinking like that. And the brahmanas are not thinking like that. They're not thinking that, well, why have a government? And, you know, they're also not thinking that, well, we have killed this king, you know, why don't we do the government business? Because in this situation, because the government has fallen, you know, King Vaina has, you know, been removed permanently, then many thieves and rogues are creating, you know, great havoc. That is another problem. When there's no government, that you know, it is an opportunity for the thieves and rogues to act with, you know, with impunity. That well, no one will punish us. There is no rule. So, you know, quite often when there's some breakdown of you know, government services, sometimes there's you know, flood or something, then people will, you know, loot and steal and rape and so many things, because somehow the government services break down for some temporary time. But the brahmanas are not thinking that there should be no government, and the brahmanas are not thinking that they should take government. They're thinking that there is a system in the universe where a certain, the Varnashram system, where a certain section of the population who have certain qualities and training, they should govern. There must be government. But that, you know, there must be a law and order department, you know, a government with a law and order, and they're maintaining everyone with specific rules and regulations by which everyone, you know, will fit into that. They're understanding that. Now, the brahmanas will never steer away from that idea. Now, why is that? Because it's a Vedic understanding. And why is it so entrenched within the Vedic culture or the Vedic scriptures? Is because the Vedic scripture is representing the spiritual reality. So Vedic culture ultimately is helping people that while they exist in this material world, that they will gradually be able to perceive spiritual reality. That what we are experiencing in this world is very similar to what we will experience in the spiritual world, but without the inebriety. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, you know, there is the verse which describes that there is an eternal. What's the actual verse? What's the actual word? Eternal. It's uses the word that banyan tree, which has its roots going upwards, and the branches going downwards. So I just asked the children, where would you see such a the children? Sometimes I ask the children, the adults, you know, like to get a few credits as they yell out. But one of the children, where do we see a tree where the roots go up and the branches go down? Where would you see such a tree? Who knows? So it's upside down. Where do you see an upside down tree? Huh? We're going to have to ask the adults, and they're going to make you look. They're going to make themselves look better than you. Go on. A banyan tree. Yeah, let's not let the adults get the better of you. That's right, very good, yeah, banyan tree, yeah, that's right. It reflected, where do you see that banyan tree, upside down? Where do you see it upside down? Huh? What happens if you look at the lake? If you look in the lake, what do you see? The reflection, yeah, that's right. There you go. So you're on the right point. Yeah, that's it. So actually, this banyan tree represents the material world. That it's a reflection of the spiritual world. So the Vedas. If we take the Vedic understanding, which is the conclusion of all the Vedic knowledge, which is helping us to understand the absolute truth or the absolute reality, states that it asks the question, what is the reality? What is Brahman? You know, what is that eternal reality? And the answer is given in the Vedanta Sutra that that absolute truth, that Brahman, is the fountainhead of all emanations, both material and spiritual. The Brahman, or the absolute truth, is the emanation of all things, both directly and indirectly. So directly means that it manifests the spiritual reality, the spiritual world, by Kuntaloka, Krishna Loka. And indirectly, what is the indirect manifestation of the absolute truth? Where's our children? Paying attention? So the direct manifestation of the absolute truth is the spiritual world. What's the indirect manifestation of reality? Where's that banyan scholar? If the tree is the real thing, and that's the direct manifestation, what's the indirect manifestation, which is more like a not quite real? The reflection. Yes. Yeah. Local pundit. And, that's right. So, directly and indirectly, the absolute truth manifest the spiritual world and the material world. So, if we have a law and order department in this material world, it must exist in the spiritual world. So if our governments are the reflection of the law and order department and the rules and regulations which maintain everything properly in this world, what is the original feature of that in the spiritual world? What's that? Vishnu, yeah, Krishna. And especially Vishnu. Because Vishnu, in his hands, he carries. One time, Srila Prabhupada was explaining this philosophy in relationship to a question he was asked in 1969 in New York. So, you know, one of the students asked him that, you know, he was a little confused, and he was asking, so, you know, Vishnu carries four symbols and their weapons. And then, because he was a little confused, he was thinking they were all weapons. So he was saying, how is a lotus flower a weapon? You know, so... but Srila Prabhupada explained that, you know, the lotus and the conch, then they're not weapons, but they're for blessing. They're for blessing the devotees. So you see that sometimes the Lord carries those. We see that Balaram usually has a club, you know, by his side. And the disc and the club, they're the weapons for punishing the demons and the atheists. And as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, they're also for punishing those who are envious of the devotees, those who try to, you know, follow the Vedic process under the shelter of Lord Vishnu. Just like an example of that is Durvasa Muni. Of course, Durvasa Muni is not a demon, but he was punished. He was punished by the chakra. Just like we're coming up to Govardhan Puja. Indra, he's also not a demon. But he was also treated like a demon. He knew that he was going to be punished. Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, it's a very interesting pastime, that he says, you know, Indra was manifesting these demoniac qualities and demoniac behavior. Prabhupada says, of course, Indra is not a demon, he's a devotee. But he was behaving like a demon. Durvasa Muni is also, he's not a demon. But he was behaving like harassing, you know, wanted to harass a very nice, becoming envious. Because, you know, in the mind of Durvasa Muni, Ambarish Maharaj was a king. Now, he was, you know, thinking, well, I'm a Brahmin, therefore, you know, and a yogi, I'm in a superior position. And Ambarish Maharaj, you're a king, you know, a person who deals with money and politics. So, you know, why you should be getting any respect, or, you know, people should be treating you so, you know, I'm the one who should be getting respect. It's very interesting here, where the Brahmins, they're not thinking like this. They're thinking, no, the Kshatriyas must get their due respect. And they must have their due position. We cannot, you know, there's no envy. There should not be envy between the Brahmanas and any of the sections. There shouldn't be envy between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, nor the Brahmanas and the Sudras. That's an actual Brahmana. Envy is not one of the qualities you read of Brahmanas. But because the Vedic system is that Krishna says that any person, by their natural occupational duty, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or the Ashram, can attain complete perfection, performing their duties, while surrendering, for the pleasure of the Supreme, for the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, we see that, the Brahmanas have certain qualities, but if one takes shelter of Vishnu or Krishna, Narayan, they also develop all the qualities of the Brahmanas. It doesn't matter whether they're a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. Prabhupada says even a Chandala. He says it doesn't matter. Even they're a Chandala, if they follow the, sacrificing their particular activities in a way that's pleasing and for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, they develop all the good qualities. They become Vaishnavas. So the Brahmanas, they were not envious or in a mood, let us exploit the situation and take advantage of the Kshatriyas, problem that now, they've fallen from power, we can seize power. They're not like that. No, it must be maintained because, they're all, each part of the body is equally important. Although, especially the Brahmanas, if the Brahminical society is maintained, we can see that, the whole body or the social body is, kept more in order, especially when the head is there. When the head is not there, the Brahmanas representing the head, then we may have problems. So the Brahmanas are particularly important, yet the Brahmanas should treat each of the body, parts of the body or the social body equally, without envy. None of us, I don't know if there's anyone here, put up your hands if anyone's got a grudge against their arm. Anyone got a problem with their, the little toe on their feet? Got some hatred, got some vengeance coming on? No. Because they're equally dear to us because they're part of the body. So the Brahmanas are like that. And so the Vedas are teaching that Lord Vishnu, he has his club and his disc, and that is the original law and order department. So nothing can exist in this world unless it exists in the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada says, actually, in this world, it is not possible for us to manufacture anything. It cannot exist unless it exists already in the spiritual world. So you cannot manufacture anything. Whatever we haven't manufactured anything new. It is, but we can distort the original. We can make a perverted reflection of the absolute truth. So, therefore, we see that everything that exists in this material world is a reflection of the spiritual reality. So, therefore, even in the, I think it's the Christian scriptures where it says that man is created in the image of God. So, now, generally, therefore, people think that because we're depicting the Supreme Lord as Vishnu or Narayana or Krishna, therefore, we're creating a spiritual reality which somehow conforms to our understanding of the material world. Therefore, we're creating some imaginary spiritual world, you know, which is something like, what we have here. So that's how we come up with an idea of the spiritual world. People think like that. But the fact is that just as, you know, in the reflection, so Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a photo. You know, if you look at a person in a photo, you can actually see every detail of that person. You know, all the details are there. Nothing is left out. But it is a photo, so it's not the actual person. Therefore, it's not the reality. And he says, therefore, you know, by study of this world, especially when it's in proper order, you can actually perceive the absolute truth. You can actually perceive the spiritual reality. So, therefore in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, there are statements, among men, I'm the monarch. Now, of course, you know, amongst different species of life, when we come to the human form of life, that feature is very close to the form of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world, that human-like form. And actually the activities of the humans are very, very much like the activities of the personality of Godhead in the spiritual world. Except in the spiritual world there is no corruption, inebriety, but here there is. So there is a similarity. The understanding is, in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter says, among men I am the monarch. Okay. So, you know, there's the representation of the personality of Godhead, that he represents this law and order, maintaining everything, that what we're seeing here in the monarch, we should understand by studying, if that is in this material world, then that is there in God. That is there in the spiritual world. Among weapons, what did you say? I am the rod of chastisement. Yeah, danda. So, actually, especially when we study, just like if we see, look at the sun. The sun, it sits in one place, and yet, although it's in one place, it spreads its energy everywhere. So again, Krishna says, he describes, this is, I am like the sun, because the personality of Godhead has that ability also, that his energy is maintaining everything. He can sit in one place and yet his energies can spread everywhere. So the fact that is existing in this world through the sun gives us an understanding that can only exist here if that feature is there in the spiritual world, in the personality of Godhead. And actually, everything we perceive in this world, we can actually begin to see that this is a reflection of the reality of the personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada says, by studying this material world in detail, through the Gita, you can actually perceive or understand the spiritual world. And the main thing, of course, is that the spiritual world is full of variety. It's not impersonal. Now, the mistake that the impersonalists make is that they consider, if we have these, so much, if variety in this world is a source of so much misery and illusion and entanglement, how can these nonsense things, as Prabhupada says, exist in the spiritual world? So Srila Prabhupada says, in that sense, you're actually correct. You know, up to that point, they're correct. How can those things, you know, inebrieties and distress and corruption and falsity and, you know, entanglement that we see, that we get from the misery, that we get from varieties, and how can that exist in the pure spiritual reality? So therefore, but the mistake they make is they say, therefore, there is no variety in the spiritual world. But actually, you know, if man is created in the image of God, and this material world is a reflection or a shadow of the spiritual reality, then there must be variety. But that variety is without inebriety. Now, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was discussing, you know, this, that his disciples were asking him about Vishnu, you know, what is the club, what is the lotus, and so many different things. One of them asked, I've heard that the, you know, clothes that the brahmacharis wear are very similar to what they wear in Vaikuntha. You know, dhoti. And Prabhupada, he said, Krishna does not wear coat and shirt, pants. generally one cloth, dhoti. And, you know, sometimes a little covering on the top, but he said, you know, generally, you know, Radharani will cover, you know, the full body, the sari. Otherwise, he said, even in India today, you know, the men, you know, they don't always have to wear the top. You know, it's not required. But the women are always covered. You know, it's an interesting point because, you know, there's sometimes, you know, this question, should we wear dhoti and, you know, the traditional clothes? And if it's helpful to perceive, you know, the nature of the spiritual world, then certainly it couldn't be harmful. I mean, certainly for preaching, you know, we wear clothes that help people to, you know, not be, you know, they may not want to listen to us if they're, you know, disturbed by our dress. It's too much for them to accept sometimes, you know. But for people who don't have a problem how we dress, and, you know, in this day and age, it, you know, boggles my mind with the way people dress in Kali Yuga, how in any way they could be somehow alarmed to see a devotee, you know, nicely dressed, clean, and, you know, but you know, it's you know, you see, they have, you know, they tattoo themselves like lizards and frogs, and they have protrusions from all sorts of different parts of their bodies, and, you know, pins and needles and all sorts of things, and then they look at the devotee, oh, you've got this nice clean cloth on, oh, how ghastly, you know. So, but. anyway, so Srila Prabhupada was saying that, you know, this is, so it does, and in the Nectar Devotion also it describes there that, you know, when you see the devotees, you know, in their, you know, the saffron, and, you know, the tilak, and, you know, they look like they've come from Vaikuntha. And, you know, it says that there, and the women in the beautiful saris. Srila Prabhupada said, you know, he's a sannyas. He said, women look most beautiful in a sari. Yeah. So, but, you know, and of course, you know, true beauty is there in Vaikuntha. So, why not? But Srila Prabhupada was discussing Vaikuntha. One of the boys asked that, well then, is there, if everything is there in the spiritual world, is there frustration, hatred, lust, you know, anger, violence? And Srila Prabhupada said, very intelligent boy. I said, yes, yes, but without inebriety. He said, just like frustration. He said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of frustration that I could not attain Krishna, he jumped into the ocean, Jagannath Puri, almost to, you know, kill himself. Just jumped in the ocean from frustration at this. But Srila Prabhupada says, but that frustration is without inebriety. That frustration is a manifestation of the attainment of the highest ecstasy of love of God. He said, actually, there is frustration in the material world, in the spiritual world, but that frustration has no disappointment. All these, everything is there in the spiritual world, but they all increase the varieties of tasting transcendental bliss. And again, you know, speaking of Lord Vishnu, that of course Prabhupada says, you know, there's no possibility of violence in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world. But, you know, the propensity to fight is there, but it's an enjoyable, loving exchange. So, you know, it's not so much violence which produces so much pain and suffering. It's you know, fighting that produces increases the prema, the love, the loving exchange, and the transcendental bliss. But he says that still, because you know, there's no opportunity for that in Vaikuntha. Therefore, the Lord sends his own devotees sometimes to this material world, such as he did with Jaya and Vijaya. And then the Lord comes as Lord Narasimhadev and kills them and fights with them. Like that. He said, so in this way, you know, because, you know, the... sometimes, you know, it's questioned, you know, how did Jaya and Vijaya fall from Vaikuntha? But actually, you know, it was detected by the Lord within their hearts that they understood that the Lord has his propensity, and out of love for him, they did not want to see any, you know, unfulfilled propensity, you know, there within the Lord. And And the Lord understood that, and therefore he sent them, you know, to them. He, you know, that arrangement of, you know, the apparent offence of the gatekeepers with the four Kumaris, and that arrangement allowed them to go to the material world and fulfil the Lord's, you know, propensity. So, and Prabhupada says, but he does that also to show the demons and the atheists in this world that, you know, if you do not follow the rule of law, which ultimately is coming from the Vedas, from Vishnu, then for you there will be the club and the disc. And at the same time, he's fulfilling his own propensity. Also, we see in Krishna Loka that, you know, Krishna and the cowherd boys will challenge each other. And Krishna likes to be defeated. And then when he's defeated, then one of the cowherd boys will jump up on top of his shoulder. Now, you will take me wherever I want to go, like this. And just like, you know, a father, they do that with the children. A father will... Even you see amongst, you know, tigers and lions, You know, there's this absolutely ferocious, you know, the machines meant for killing. You know, the look in their eye, if they look at you, means, you know, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to eat you. You know, they're just made for devouring people. You see them with their little cubs. You know, the lioness is trying to sleep. She's already been 3 days trying to get something to eat. She finally thinks, I'll lay down, have a nice sleep. So this motherhood goes on in all species, right? Trying to have a sleep, I'm tired, I've done my duty. And the cub's scratching her eye and slapping her in the face and gnarling at her. So, you know, the mother would just play, you know, and they fight. And, you know. Of course, in that, that's how the little cubs learn. But the mother enjoys, even in the lion species, what to speak of humans, they enjoy, you know, letting the little cubs beat them, defeat them. Oh, you've got me, yes. You know. So, you know, this propensity, how is that? How do we see that? And that is because it is there within the Supreme Lord. So then, you know, the impersonalists, because they cannot understand that there can be variety in the spiritual reality, therefore they cannot understand how there can be love within the spiritual world. And what, as Srila Prabhupada said, this discovery by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so even amongst Vaishnavas, such a difficult conception of the extent of the variety, you know, in the spiritual world, that even amongst Vaishnavas, this is a discovery, Prabhupada says, of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, of this Parakiya Rasa, or, you know, where Krishna is unmarried, Krishna is unmarried, but Radharani, his girlfriend, she's married to someone else, apparently. And they are, you know, exchanging loving relationships. So, because Srila Prabhupada explains the innocence of everything, that, you know, Radharani and Krishna, of course, they grew up, you know, as children, and they loved each other from the very first sight. So, of course, you know, naturally, as things worked out, Radharani was married to someone, but she never, you know, her love for Krishna was always there from the very beginning. And she would always come and stand by Krishna, and they would, you know, enjoy seeing each other and, you know, exchanging different activities. But there is no... And in Krishna also, apart from his relationship with Radharani, he had many other girlfriends, gopis. Of course, the gopis and Radharanis, although she's apparently married to someone else, she's actually Krishna's own internal spiritual pleasure potency. There's no question that she's unchaste. She's actually a manifestation, literally the manifestation of, you know, Krishna's own self. She's an expansion of Krishna. You know, it's stated that one time Krishna, he told Balaram, one time he was standing in the groves of Vrindavan, and he came across a golden, you know, platform, Mandapa, and he saw his own reflection there. And in that reflection, in that golden reflection, you know, this attraction to, you know, his own self manifests. And from his, it describes how his own heart met his own heart, and from the bliss from his heart, from the left side, manifests the expansion of Krishna in the female form as Srimati Radharani, who is Krishna, therefore in the form where he is able to, you know, experience that loving exchange with himself. So it's not different from Krishna. There's no question of any, you know, anything actually being unchaste or not proper. And Krishna, Srimati Radharani, she expands as many, many, many different gopis. So many. And Krishna was enjoying with all of them, but as Prabhupada says, there was no contraceptive pills. You know, there was none of the calamities and inebrities that we experience in this world. He describes that when something is reflected, when in the reflection, that which is the highest manifestation of transcendental loving ecstasy, when it's reflected in the reflection, it becomes the lowest. And therefore, to imitate those pastimes of Krishna and Radharani, the gopis, through adultery and illicit sex and so many things, is the most damned activity in the material world, because it is so full of inebriety and that, and so full of calamity and misery and so entangling. In the spiritual world, those loving exchanges go on, but there is they go on without being, there's no entanglement, there's no misery. It is all a manifestation of increasing the variety of transcendental bliss. And variety is the mother of enjoyment. So, in this way, we see that, you know, these brahmanas understanding that, you know, what is set up by the Vedic scriptures as a way of maintaining this world through the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, maintaining law and order, and is a way of, you know, helping people in this world to live peacefully, piously, and purify themselves through the association of the Supreme Lord, and gradually learn that the varieties of things that they're doing in this world, they can experience that in the spiritual world, but in their purified form. And the whole Vedic system is set up for that purpose, and therefore the Brahmanas did not want to, you know, do anything else but to re-establish the proper Vedic system and establish the Kshatriyas back into their position like that. So I'll just leave it there if there's any questions or comments.
Accusation, but they did not present any proof. So the media and everyone, I was talking yesterday how they really talked, the media presented really untruthfully the one that happened. Was mentioning the one
that is that a question or a comment?
Just a comment. Because there is accusation, but they didn't present any proof. And
yeah.
It seems like whole world.
Yeah,
It's
a very complicated issue. We're not going, because when materialists do things, it becomes very complex, and so we don't want to hear too much about it. But I take your point. But just for the sake of showing that these things are going on, so we're not pointing the finger at anyone, but you know, we don't want to discuss too much of the activities of materialists, except for the fact that we understand that, you know, it's you know, they create a lot of problems and suffering. So that's all we really want to take from that. So we're not going to go any further into the politics of that. So any other questions or comments? Come.
So how much is it possible to establish again like one ashram culture?
Say that again.
Is it possible again to establish this one ashram system that was there from them?
So the question being, is it possible to establish the Varnashram system? Not really, but what Prabhupada says is this. Prabhupada wanted a Devi Varnashram college that we establish for the purpose of assisting devotees in ISKCON and the general mass of people. And he said, this is how, you know, that through our efforts to spread the Sankirtan movement, whatever is possible, we will do. See? So, you know, so many things are not possible. Our purpose is to spread the Sankirtan movement. Similarly, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never established any temples. And in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, the chanting of Hare Krishna, the distribution of books is more important than establishing temples. He says that in the purport of his book in the seventh canto. But he also says, but where it is possible to establish temples, then we do that. So basically, you know, our main activity is book distribution and distributing the holy name of the Lord in Prasadam. That's our main activity. That's Sankirtan movement. By doing that, where we purify the environment and create the opportunity and temples are able to be established, then we establish temples. And where the opportunity to establish some of the aspects of Varnashram, which are conducive to, you know, helping people in their spiritual path, we do that. But we don't ever do those things to the detriment of the Sankirtan movement. So, for instance, in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati course, Gaudimath, when they got the very nice temple in Calcutta, and he saw that now the devotees are becoming envious of one and each other, who will get this room, who will, you know, and they will be fighting. And they fought so hard for the control of the temples that it destroyed the actual Sankirtan activities that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati the call. So we should never place anything above the Sankirtan mission of distributing the holy name of the Lord, Prasadam, and distributing books, Srimad Bhagavatam, which teaches us how to perceive the spiritual reality in a personal way. But through the Sankirtan movement, we should understand that we'll be very surprised how purifying it is that we can establish so many temples and so many aspects of Varnashram, whatever is possible. So whatever is possible, then that we shall see.
Yeah. How do we measure success in our book distribution and prasadam distribution?
Well, the success of a devotee, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, described the success of a devotee, you know, how many devotees they've made. And of course, devotee means, you know, nice devotees. Mm. Not that we have the numbers and they're all still doing all sorts of nonsense and running around envious of each other. You know, nice devotees, you know, how many devotees one's made? Nice devotees, you make it, you know, if someone is able to bring someone to the movement and look after them to the point where they're really good quality devotee, that counts for a lot. How many devotees you make, especially nice quality devotees, you know, how much prasadam is distributed, how many books are distributed, how many temples are opened, you know, how many, you know, gurukuls are opened, you know, how many farming, you know, this is how we judge the success, that if we're getting such a, you know, a good reaction from the people, that these things are expanding to the point where, you know, there's a, you know, the holy name is heard in every town and village, in every home, and in every home, and every, you know, there are deities and temples, and the hearing and chanting of, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita is going on all over the world. That's the success of the devotee. You know, it's very, very easy to measure. Yeah.
But then we can see in Melbourne also that like thousands of books distributed every year, thousands of like 10,000 meals distributed to Australians.
Mm.
We don't see many Australian devotees around.
Yeah. Well, you know, say if you look at say some of the wars, you know, if you count how many bullets and bombs were, you know, used in some of the previous wars to get the victory. But still, you know, if people are able to live freely, that, you know, sections of society cannot be just, you know, what they call a genocide, you know, let's kill off all the Jews, let's kill off all the black people, let's kill off all the homies. You know, when people are allowed to live freely in this world, that's what the war is about, that, you know, we cannot have that sort of demoniac rule. So do we then, you know, say, oh, we use too many bullets, too many bombs, you know? If there's a better way, certainly. But in this world, quite often people don't understand a better way. Our weapons is prasadam and the holy name and the devotees. That's our weapons. We're trying to, you know, we're also doing war with the material energy and the agents of material energy. But we're trying to teach that, you know, the best way to, you know, fight a battle in Kurukshetra, in Kali Yuga, you know, you can't kill everyone that's in the wrong. You have to kill everyone. Everyone doing something silly and violent and terrible and nasty. You know, the battle has to take place in their hearts, and that can be done. We have the bullets, you know, the gulab jamuns and the samosas and the halva and, you know, the curd sabji and, you know, the association of devotees and the dancing, the chant. These are our weapons. As a last resort, you know, here the brahmanas, in an emergency situation, even the brahmanas will fight. And it describes in this purport. You know, if it comes to it, you know, in the early days, we had to fight to get out on the street. When we went out on the street to chant Hare Krishna, not my sleeves up, you had to be prepared to have a bit of a barney, a bit of a rumble. You know, you could get a whole heap of people come up, and they would literally beat the living daylights out of you if we let them. But actually, you know, I won't go into it, but, you know, because I know the early days, there were some big, big fights, all in out brawls in some of the cities. Melbourne, Sydney, big, big brawls between the devotees and people, and the devotees fought and won. But as a last resort, you know, I've seen devotees, Prabhupada, you know, not that I saw, but one time he was in Bombay, I think in India, I'm not sure if it was Bombay, but what was happening was the, they did a Pandal program, and the, you know, the devotees were dancing on stage, and then they sort of got down off the stage and they went through the crowd, see? And everyone loved it. So the next day, they were doing kirtan, and then what happened is some of the same people were there in the crowd, and they wanted the ladies and the men to come down and get into the crowd as well. So the devotees just weren't going to do it that night. But people started pulling at the saris of the devotees. Prabhupada got up, started swinging his kartals, and just raced towards the front of the stage. You know, don't you touch those, Mataji. You know, if a devotee, emergency, if there's no other recourse, a devotee will do what has to be done. But otherwise, the best course is, you know, we are a non-cooperation movement. We are the original, you know, non-violence, you know, like a peaceful demonstration. We're not going to cooperate with the material energy, that we should be stuck in the cycle of birth and death with our uncontrolled mind and senses. Prabhupada says we're a non-cooperation movement. The mind and senses are going to say, you know, you smoke this cigarette, you take this intoxication, you do this nonsense. No, we're not cooperating. And the government say, no, you must cooperate. You know, you must, you know, do these things. We must have gambling and this and that and the other. No, no, we're not cooperating. We're against these things. So we're non-cooperative, but peaceful. But, you know, you do not know in the future if we're called that we have no choice but to fight, then we'll fight. And Prabhupada says you can, a devotee can even use nuclear weapons in the service of Krishna if it comes to it. So, yeah. All right. So speaking of peaceful non-cooperation, Prashada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.